Hello, everybody. We are live. And no, this is not the UFC Apex, but you can pump the rock him, because guess who's back? The Big Phil Combo, live from the Big Phil Palace in Aurora, Ontario, is here, filling in for the UFC 283 post show for John Pollock, who unfortunately can't be here. Here, as always, with the number one MMA man at Post Wrestling, the one, the only, the irreplaceable, unmistakable, Eric Marcotte. Eric, how are you doing today?
I am doing fine. A bit tired. Glad to have you back, Phil. That was a real MMA retirement you had. I mean, you get the big send-off, and 3 months later, you're back headlining the shows. Wow.
Yes. Seven months. I'm not quite sure what it was. Exactly. But lots of retirement talk today as we review UFC 283. And not just UFC 283, but at the end of the show, we're also going to be recapping 2022 with the 2022 post-MMA-ish awards. We'll do some predictions. We've got some John Pollock picks in there as well to talk about. So a lot of ground to cover. So why don't we get right into it, Eric? UFC 283 was taking place from the Genes Arena in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. The UFC returning for their first live event since the beginning of the pandemic. Of course, they had that one empty arena event at the start of 2022. The main card being headlined by a title fight between Glover Teixeira and Jamahal Hill. Now, we had a title fight for the light heavyweight title not even a month ago, Eric. So first, before we get into the action, how did you feel about this fight and the fact that it was a title fight?
I mean, the entire roller coaster to get here has been insane for anyone who either doesn't know or has forgotten. Around this time last year, Glover Teixeira was the light heavyweight champion. He tried to defend his title against Yuri Prochazka, but he ultimately lost that fight in the fifth round, and Yuri became our champion. They were scheduled to rematch at the end of the year, but Yuri had to withdraw from the fight due to injury, and he vacated his title. And in their place, Magomed Ankalaev and Jan Blachowicz fought for the vacant championship. Unfortunately, their fight ended in a draw. And the fight was just so bad, according to Dana White, that he decided to remove both of them from the title conversation, and he decided to take Jamahal Hill from his fight against Anthony Smith and insert him against Glover Teixeira here for the vacant title. So this was all very, very weird. I'm not sure if anybody looked at Jamahal Hill and Glover Teixeira as the two top light heavyweights in the world, but I also don't think there's a considerable difference between the best light heavyweight in the world and the 20th best light heavyweight in the world. So whatever.
Okay. Well, I think from the standpoint that Glover was originally scheduled for that title fight at UFC 282, it made sense for him to be in this match. And you would think that one of Ankalaev or Blachowicz would be the person to slot in here. But of course, that match was less than a month ago. Seems unreasonable to even get them back. And as you stated, Dana White not terribly happy with either man's performance in that last light heavyweight title fight. So I guess it's as good of a fight as any. And I didn't really have a problem for it being for the title because the top dog, Yuri Prochazka, is on the shelf, and we don't know when he will be returning, although he does seem prepared to come back for that light heavyweight strap via a social media post he released at the end of the main event. So with that being said, why don't we go through the action?
All right, so we start the fight, and obviously, just as you would expect, Glover Teixeira, he's searching for takedowns. He goes for numerous attempts in the first round, but Hill's takedown defense is really holding up. He's able to shrug most of them off, and I thought he was doing good work attacking the body of Teixeira with kicks mostly. As the fight progressed, he started to work his jab too, kind of busted Glover up. There was an eye poke to Hill at one point in the action, but I mean, he didn't take too much time before he recovered. I thought the first round was a solid one for Hill, scored at 10-9 in his favor, and we head right into round two. Hill catches Glover with an eye poke of his own, and Glover was very mad about the eye poke, which was kind of funny considering he did the same thing like literally a minute beforehand in the action. But much like Hill, he doesn't take much time to recover, and the action resumes. Glover was landing very good leg kicks. I thought it was some of the best offense he had throughout the fight, but it wasn't a weapon he really went back to too often. At one point, Hill lands this big head kick that just rocks Glover, and Teixeira is in deep trouble as Hill is swarming him with strikes. He rocks him over and over again, and the fight is pretty close to being stopped, but in typical Glover Teixeira fashion, he somehow survives this relentless flurry from Hill and begins to fire back, lands some big shots of his own, and even brings Hill to the ground towards the end of the round. He couldn't get the finish he was looking for, even though I think he almost makes it to mount at one point. Hill escapes to his feet. They trade hands to end the round. This was a very entertaining round. Despite Glover's late comeback, this was still a fairly clear one for Hill, just because he nearly got Glover out of there. We go into round three. Hill defends a takedown from Glover to start the round, so he's recovered from whatever state he was in at the end of the second. He rocks Glover again with another head kick, and this one sends Glover to the ground. Hill follows Teixeira down as he tries to finish the fight. Once again, Glover somehow survives this. It was so close to being stopped, and it probably could have been stopped, but he weathers the storm, makes it back to his feet. He's very clearly hurt, very clearly tired, but he is still marching forward, trying to find that big shot that would change the fight. Hill is still in control, though. He lands a really heavy right hand and a pretty strong ground for him. I don't think there's any question that he's up three rounds going into the championship rounds, Phil.
Oh, definitely. In fact, I even gave that round 10-8. And anyone familiar with the show knows that I'm a bit stingy on the 10-8s.
Yeah, so this was a fairly one-sided fight to this point, although Glover was having his moments. We go into round four, and at this point, Glover just has brutal cuts above both of his eyebrows. A knee to the head from Hill finds its target, and he successfully defends a takedown moments later. Hill's just landing damaging strike after damaging strike. He's rocking Glover over and over, and Mark Goddard is so close to stopping this fight, but Glover is a tough old man, and he just won't go down. He somehow makes it to the end of this round, but this is one that, I mean, I thought was a 10-8 round. It was just a very one-sided beatdown, and Glover didn't really even have any moments in this one. We go into round five. The doctor is brought in to check on Glover. It is determined that he could continue. Teixeira scores a big takedown towards the start of the round, and he works his way all the way into a mount, but Hill slides out from under him and takes top position. Hill rides it out for a while, but with a minute left, he lets Glover back up onto his feet, and Glover tries to make something happen in the last minute. It never really comes, though, and the fight does go the distance. All three judges score the fight 50-44 for Jamal Hill, and he is your new UFC light heavyweight champion.
Yeah, I thought it was an extremely impressive performance from Jamal Hill, along with showing a wide variety of strikes and that deadly left high kick that landed over and over again, nearly finished the fight twice. He showed great defensive wrestling throughout. And in the two instances where he was brought to the ground and Glover was able to maintain that top position, he was able to find a way to escape. So it just showed a really well-rounded, smart game. And although he did begin to fatigue a little bit at points through this fight, it never really seemed like he was like seriously tired, which is a testament as well to him, because this fight was short notice, right? He didn't really get a 5-round training camp in place for this. So yeah, incredibly impressive performance. And when you look at sort of the lineup of light heavyweights, If he's able to defend against Jiří Procházka, he does really seem like somebody with a lot of long-term potential, just a very smooth, intelligent skill set.
Yeah, he's definitely a talented fighter. He's a very dangerous fighter. It's very rare that a Jamal Hill fight goes the distance, but obviously Glover is just made of something else entirely with this guy's ability to absorb punishment and keep going. Despite the result or the draw in the last fight, I still look at Magomed Ankalaev as the guy to beat in this division right now, with all due respect to Hill and Jiří Procházka, who both have claims to being the best light heavyweight. But there are some interesting factors at light heavyweight right now. There's certainly not a guy that you look at and you're just like, oh, well, nobody's going to beat him. This belt's been hot potatoed around since John Jones left the division, and I can see that continuing as this title is next defended.
Okay, so before we get to Glover, your UFC, your matchmaking, we're going to assume that Yuri's out still for a while. Based on the reports of the initial injury, I mean, it's still only like a little over a month ago. So who knows when he's going to be back. So it seems like you've got three options for Hill. You've got Ankalaev, you've got Blachowicz, and you potentially have Anthony Smith, who he was originally scheduled to fight and was the backup for this match, although he did miss weight, championship weight by 1.5 pounds. So you're the UFC. What are you going to do?
I do think Anthony Smith is pretty far removed from the picture right now. I wouldn't even really factor him in. I think you're looking at either Blachowicz or Ankalaev. And of those two options, I do think Ankalaev would be the more sensible fight to make, although Jan Blachowicz certainly has a case. I mean, we broke into the scoring of, we spent so much time discussing the scoring, John and myself, on that main event between Ankalaev and Blachowicz on our last UFC post show. And Blachowicz did fight a better fight than he was given credit for by a certain UFC commentator moments after the fight's conclusion. But I think Ankalaev is probably the most likely next option. But really, it depends on how long Hill's going to sit out, because if he's going to be out for a while, then it very well could be Procházka who's next in line.
All right. Well, as well, at the end of this fight, after the scores were read, Glover Teixeira took off the gloves, laid them down, and announced his retirement from the UFC. I mean, how easy? 43 years old. He had talked about retirement previous to this. So I guess first and foremost, Eric, how much do you think that this retirement will stick more than others?
Like most MMA retirements, I always come into this with a sense of this may have very well been an in-the-moment kind of decision, but Glover Teixeira is 43 years old. He's been doing this forever, and at this point, he's accomplished everything he set out to do. So it wouldn't shock me if this was the last time we see Glover Teixeira, and if so, he leaves behind a hell of a resume, really boosted by these final years of his career.
Yes, ultimately did become UFC light heavyweight champion after a long run inside the UFC and then a long road to get to the UFC. So let's assume that this is the final call for one Glover. Any particular memory that stands out for you with him?
I mean, I think in terms of a fight that he won, him finally winning the UFC light heavyweight championship, defeating Jan Blachowicz, is a memory that will stick in my mind. His brutal, brutal beatdown of Anthony Smith will also be one that holds a place in my memory, one of the toughest fights to watch that I can recall. He had a lot of big wins throughout his career, Rashad Evans, Rampage Jackson, beat Thiago Santos in a really fun fight. He had a very impressive run.
Definitely. I mean, I think he's pretty much a lock for the UFC Hall of Fame in my book, but time will tell. All right. So moving on the card, we also had another title fight. We had the flyweight title being contested between Davison Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno. This was the fourth time that the two fought, the first time being a draw, the second Moreno winning, the third Davison winning. Davison injured for a potential fourth fight. So Moreno gets an interim strap after defeating Kai Kara France. So before we get into the action, Eric, just your thoughts on this quadrilogy, tetralogy, whatever it is that they were calling it ahead of this fight. I know I was excited for it because the previous fights were all excellent, and these are such skilled fighters.
Yeah, I was in the same boat. Even though these guys have spent a lot of time fighting each other, I was still excited just because all of their fights have been so interesting. These are both really high-level fighters, and I was expecting another one going into this one. So don't get me wrong. I was hoping this would be the final time these guys were ever even in the same room as each other, but I was ready for one last fight.
So you were ready for a fifth one to potentially happen?
No, that is the opposite of what I said. Okay. I do not want to see fight.
Okay, so I thought you said one last one. I thought after that. Okay, yes, I misunderstood. Please bear with me, people. I'm rusty at this. All right, so why don't you tell us how the action went down?
We didn't get the glove touch to start the fight. Moreno went for it, and then Figueiredo chose to bow instead, and they bowed to each other. I'm not sure if that's like more respectful or less respectful, whatever. The fight starts, and we see Moreno quickly taking Figueiredo down. Figueiredo completely managed to avoid any damage here. He tried to throw in the guillotine pretty much. It wasn't close to coming in, but it was enough to allow him to get back to his feet. Moreno lands this big overhand right, and Figueiredo responds with a front kick. Figueiredo was really working that front kick early in that first round. He found some success with it before the fighters would continue to trade punches. Takedown defense held up for both guys until the end of the round, where Moreno secured one more, but Figueiredo responded with a heel hook attempt and was unable to secure the finish before time expired. Pretty close round. I wonder how you scored it, Phil.
I had it 10-9 for Moreno. I think he outstruck in terms of volume Figueiredo as well. He did get those two takedowns. Now, despite the heel hook attempt by Figueiredo, Figueiredo did land some solid shots to the body. But one thing that I noticed in this fight versus the previous fights was it just seemed like Moreno was landing with more power than he previously had in this one. It seemed like it was a big part of his game plan.
I gave the slight edge to Figueiredo in the first round, but it's not one that I felt particularly strongly about either. I didn't think there was moments of significant damage from either guy. Kind of a bit of a feeling out round, although there were some fun scrambles. We go into round two. Figueiredo catches a leg early and takes Moreno down. Moreno, he scrambles back to his feet fairly quickly and tags Figueiredo with a hook on the break. Figueiredo defends a takedown and lands a hook of his own. The fighters continue to exchange pretty heavy shots, with Moreno regularly landing at a higher pace than Figueiredo, who is falling a bit behind on the strike count here. At one point, Moreno goes for another takedown, and Figueiredo jumps for a guillotine in response. It was a pretty solid attempt, but Moreno escapes and takes top position. He wasn't very effective with his top position. He didn't really do anything, but he did keep the position until the end of the round. All three judges saw this one for Figueiredo, but I actually gave this one to Moreno. How about you, Phil?
I gave this one to Moreno as well. I find that a bit surprising that the judges gave it to Figueiredo, especially all three of them. I thought that there was a greater disparity in this round than in the first round.
So did I. I thought Moreno just landed the better shots here. Figueiredo did have the guillotine attempt, but Moreno was able to shake out of it. So I thought this was a round for Moreno. We go into the third round, and Moreno lands this huge left hand, and it really messes up Davison Figueiredo's eye. Figueiredo doesn't really know what happened in the moment, so he's trying to call for a break for an action, but it was a clean punch, or at least it appeared to be, and Moreno kind of takes him down while Figueiredo's complaining, and the majority of the rest of the round is Moreno in top position, landing solid shots, further damaging that eye from Figueiredo. And by the end of the round, Figueiredo's eye had just completely swollen shut. The doctor gets brought in to check on Figueiredo's eye between rounds, but it was completely closed. There is no way he can keep on fighting. So the fight is stopped, and Brandon Moreno is your winner by doctor stoppage at 5 minutes of the third round. And he is once again your UFC flyweight champion.
Yeah, I mean, what a roller coaster for the young Brandon Moreno. I mean, incredible series of fights, but I thought he really put a stamp on this one. I think there was a clear difference in the quality of the performances. I know for the previous fight, Figueroa had made the point to train with Henry Cejudo for this one, but it sounded like he did not do that for this fight. And I wonder if that affected the quality of his performance in terms of perhaps the type of training he was able to get. Now, after the fight, Figueroa announces that, you know, he takes off the gloves. And you begin to get a little bit like, what's going on here? But he announces that this will be his last fight at flyweight, and he's moving up to bantamweight. So, you know, he had previously had difficulties making weight in the past, and it sounds like it continues to be a struggle for him. So just based on that fact alone, it seems like a fifth fight between these two is a long ways off.
Yeah, this did feel like the final bout of their long-standing rivalry at this point. The move to bantamweight makes sense for Figueiredo, who is now 35 years old, and clearly this weight cut is taking its toll on him. He doesn't fight with the spark that he did when he was younger. Yeah, he had a hell of a run at flyweight, a multiple-time champion, and for my money, the most entertaining fighter in the history of the UFC's flyweight division. So all the credit to him, and I'm looking forward to see what he'll do at bantamweight.
And for the new champ, Brandon Moreno, it seems like the natural next opponent is Alexander Pantoja. So any initial thoughts on that matchup?
I mean, that's clearly the fight to make. Pantoja's already beaten him twice, and he's on a decent win streak right now. Moreno is a very different fighter from the previous fights that they've had. I think Moreno's improved dramatically, but so has Pantoja. So I'm really into that fight, and I'm not sure what it's going to look like at this stage in their respective careers.
Yes, and worthwhile to note that Brandon Moreno, long time trained by James Krause, no longer with him, of course. so a new team behind him, and you know, it in my book it showed. It showed, you know, he had a different approach in this fight, different game plan, was more aggressive with the takedown attempts, mixed it up. And as I already stated, it seemed like there was an intention to throw with a little bit more precise power rather than volume in this one.
Yeah, I thought he looked fantastic. He really mixed in his offense well here. Figueroa, he's a hard guy. Like, even if you get him down, he's a hard guy to do anything to on the ground. But I think you'll see against future opponents how much he's improved that aspect of his game as well.
All right. So now moving down the card, we are done with the title fights. But we had a great welterweight matchup on paper between Gilbert Burns and Neil Magny.
That we did. So this was Burns' first fight since his fight against Khamzat Chimaev last year. A very good fight. That was just kind of early in the year, so it might have been overlooked a bit as the year progressed. But a big fight for Gilbert Burns. The fight starts, and I mean, Burns secures a takedown fairly quickly. Not a lot of offense in the first couple minutes of the fight. He takes it down, and from here it's just elementary for him. He just slices through Neil Magny's guard. He goes into the mount where he locks in an arm triangle, and Magny's forced to submit. Doesn't really get any offense of his own off throughout the fight. A very one-sided win for Gilbert Burns, who picks up the arm triangle submission at 4 minutes and 15 seconds of the very first round. What did you think about this, Phil?
Well, I thought it was a tremendous performance. Burns did not absorb a single significant strike in this fight. And when it did get to the ground, you know, Neil Magny, although we've seen him submitted in the past by top BJJ guys, you know, he has a very active guard. He has the type of body that makes it very difficult to deal with, difficult to pass the guard. And Gilbert Burns just put on a masterclass of switching sides, avoiding the active guard, and ultimately getting to that top position and arm triangle in order to be able to secure the victory. So I think if you're somebody who really enjoys high level BJJ, and if you're even just new to BJJ and just want to sort of get a little 101, this is a fight to watch because it was absolutely amazingly executed by Gilbert Burns.
Yeah, it's not as though we've never seen Neil Magny lose a fight, but it's fairly rare that guys just run through him like this. Kind of took me back to Magny's fight against Rafael dos Anjos, which actually looked very similar in the sense that RDA just kind of takes him down in the first round, secures the arm triangle win. Gilbert Burns was like a massive favorite going into this fight. And I remember before the fight started, I looked at the odds and I thought that was like crazy odds. I did expect a fairly competitive fight, but the odds makers were right on this one because it was a complete blowout.
Yes, it was. And it wasn't the only blowout, but a very different one in our next fight, which was a women's flyweight battle between Jessica Andrade and Lauren Murphy.
Okay, so yeah, let's preface this by saying this fight is it is a complete massacre. So the fight starts and Andrade lands a number of inside leg kicks, which are already landing with power. Murphy is rushing forward, but she's walking right into heavy hooks from Andrade, who is doing significant damage here. Andrade really had no fear of Murphy's power, and she just begins to rush forward with hooks, landing the vast majority of them, all while continuing to cut down Murphy's lead leg. At one point, Murphy nearly managed to take Andrade down, but Andrade just popped right back to her feet, and she just continues to walk Murphy down. This was a very one-sided round, and I went 10-8 on the first round of this fight. How about you, Phil?
I did not give this one 10-8, although I can totally understand it. I do think in this one, the first round, Lauren Murphy was able to at least land some shots in return on Jessica Andrade, but it was definitely very one-sided, which was a pattern that would continue.
Yes, we go into round two, and Murphy's corner has told her to wrestle with Andrade, but that strategy did not prove effective. Andrade was able to keep the fight on the feet, and the second round was quickly started to play out exactly like round one. She's attacking the head and body of Murphy with combinations of hooks, and Murphy was just having no success offensively in return. Like, at times, perhaps she would land a counter, but with zero power, Andrade was not affected by anything that Murphy was throwing back. Andrade is defending all of her takedown attempts and pretty much punishing her with these brutal combinations to the head and body every single time. This was another just absolute one-sided brutal beatdown for Jessica Andrade, who I had 20-16 going into round three.
Yes, I gave this one 10-8 as well. The commentators were also questioning the corner, like wondering if maybe they should stop this fight. And I think that that was probably some good advice. The difference between, let's say, this fight and the Glover fight is even though Glover was getting beaten pretty brutally as well, he did have moments of offense. He was able to create opportunities to land counter strikes and push back Jamahal Hill. So even though on his face and through shot after shot, he was wearing it, in this fight, we saw just really no significant offense from Lauren Murphy.
Yeah, as much damage as Glover took throughout that bout, he did have moments of success, and he also had what we'd call that fight-ending power or fight-ending submission ability where you think, okay, there's always a bit of hope for him. There was no hope for Lauren Murphy in this fight. There was no path to victory going into round three, and I would have liked to see the fight get stopped, but that was not what happened. Instead, we got a third round of this fight, and Andrade just rushes Murphy with strikes in the opening minute, landing a considerable portion of them with a lot of power. Murphy had just nothing to offer Andrade at this point in the fight, and like I said, I thought the damage she was taking was completely unnecessary here. To Murphy's credit, very tough, refused to go down, but whenever we're pointing out how tough a fighter it is, that's not always a good thing. At one point, Cormier forgot he was a commentator and he started screaming for the referee to stop the fight. But that didn't happen. And Murphy makes it to the final bell. I scored the fight 30-24 for Jessica Andrade. Two judges saw it 30-25 and one saw it 30-26. Yeah, this was quite the fight, Phil.
Yeah, kind of difficult to watch. Nothing really significant from Lauren Murphy, who not that long ago was challenging for a title. And that seems like a distant memory. Jessica Andrade on the other hand, who also not too long ago challenged for the title, you know, has put up a pretty impressive run. And it's not inconceivable that she does make it back to that title picture not long in the future, in my opinion.
Yeah, that, I think it really depends on if she's fighting at strawweight or committing to the strawweight division. At flyweight, I don't know if like anyone's really gunning to see her versus Shevchenko too. But at strawweight, yes. I mean, she's already beat Rose Namajunas. The second fight, Rose Namajunas won, but Jessica Andrade, all the momentum was on her side going into the end of that fight. She lost her title to Zhang Weili, the current champion, but it was a very quick 30-second fight, so I don't think anyone would be too upset about seeing them go at it again. She would have to perhaps commit a bit more to that division, though. She's been going back and forth between strawweight and flyweight, and as a result, it's kind of weird. Like, she wins this fight at flyweight against Lauren Murphy, and she calls for a title fight against Zhang in her post-fight interview. It could happen, but it's just a bit odd.
Yeah. But nonetheless, an impressive performance, and probably a bigger fight in her next outing. Alf, and just prior to that fight, the UFC announces that one, Jose Aldo Jr., is going to be inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame later this year. Aldo, of course, former featherweight champion in both the UFC and WEC, and then making a very impressive bantamweight run later in his career. I know this is one of, if not your favorite fighter of all time, Eric, so perhaps you'd be best to share your thoughts on the King of Rio.
Yeah, one of the greatest fighters of all time, unquestionably. Starting off really in his WEC run, where he just pretty much runs through everybody he fights in that division, quickly establishing himself as the best featherweight in the world, beating guys like Cub Swanson, Uriah Faber, and Mike Brown. Continuing on in the UFC, and he continues this featherweight unbeaten streak for years, defeating really perhaps one of the highest level of competition in terms of challengers that you'll see throughout a long title reign, defeating even former lightweight champion Frankie Edgar multiple times in the prime of his career, defeating Chad Mendes twice, the Korean Zombie. Now, even in the later portions of his career, Aldo was still a very high-level fighter. After losing his title to Conor McGregor and then Max Holloway, he still had competitive bouts against the likes of Alexander Volkanovski, Hinata Moicano, and of course his final bantamweight run was also very entertaining for the short time it lasted. So just one of the greatest fighters of all time, and pretty much as much of a shoe-in for a Hall of Fame as you'll get in MMA.
Now, unfortunately, we never got that Dominic Cruz versus Aldo fight. But Eric, if you had to place some odds on that potentially happening in the future.
you know what? I don't think it's going to happen in a boxing ring, which is where Jose Aldo's future lies. But I do not buy Jose Aldo's retirement from MMA for a second either. So it could very well still be in the future.
Yes, the UFC announcing that the retired Hall of Famer will be competing in a boxing match on Fight Pass, I believe, on February 10th or at some point in February. So if you do want to see a modern Jose Aldo sling leather, you will get an opportunity to see that in the near future. Okay, moving on the card, we had a light heavyweight matchup between Paul Craig and Johnny Walker.
I mean, that's the sort of fight you see on paper and you're like, oh, that's going to end in some wild way in 3 minutes, isn't it? And that's exactly what we got. Walker begins the fight with a big leg kick and he goes for another one. But this time Craig catches it and he just kind of stands there for a second too long. And Walker just starts throwing bombs at the unprotected head of Paul Craig, rocking him with the heavy right hands. Craig goes down near the cage and Walker just throws powerful hammer fists down until Craig's done. So Johnny Walker wins by TKO at 2 minutes and 16 seconds of round one. Just as weird and wild of a fight as you would expect from two of the weirdest and wildest fighters in the UFC.
Yeah, pretty impressive performance from Walker. I mean, just was able to generate a tremendous amount of power while being off balance. Really, Craig had no answer for him whatsoever. I mean, just the second those shots started landing, he dove even deeper on this single leg and never let go. And no response from him at all. Walker looking very good in his last two fights. And if we go back to his last loss, a KO punch to the new champion, Jamahal Hill, that's looking not as bad, in retrospect. So as you mentioned earlier, Eric, you see not much difference between the top of the division and the bottom of the division. Walker's almost certainly going to be ranked in the next time those come out. So how far do you think he is from, getting a legitimate title shot?
Light heavyweight, everyone's only a fight or two away. I mean, you can literally, if they just announced, say, in a few months, they're doing Jiří Procházka versus Johnny Walker, I'd say, that sounds completely sensible. Why not? So, I mean, it just is what it is. It's the state of the division right now. It's going to take years for this division to rebuild itself, hopefully. So it could be a Johnny Walker's world soon.
I think Jan Blachowicz is a great option, perhaps even Anthony Smith. That's somebody he hasn't had a fight with yet, and he's a very notable, fairly popular fighter. So that seems like a good option next. All right, so that rounds out the main card of the evening. For the preliminary portion of the card, that was the sort of main event of the prelims, was another legendary Brazilian fighter. We had Mauricio Shogun Rua taking on Ihor Potiera.
This was definitely one of those fights we looked at beforehand, and I didn't know much about Ihor, but I checked his record. I was like, all right, let's see what Ihor Potiera is all about. And I saw a lot of knockouts, and from that moment I knew, okay, I know exactly how this fight is going to go. And that's how it played out. Shogun lands a heavy left hook early, and it gets a huge reaction from this crowd, who just wants to see Shogun win one last big fight. But spoiler alert, that's not in the cards here. Pohera just, he's clearly a lot quicker than Shogun. He lands harder shots whenever he does. And Shogun's quickly cut open beneath his right eye, and a short right hand from Pereira just rocks Shogun. Ihor realizes that Shogun's hurt, and he just swarms him with strikes until Shogun finally goes down. He wins by knockout at 4 minutes and 5 seconds of the first round, and then dances over the corpse of Shogun. really depressing moments to lead us into the pay-per-view.
Yeah, and along with the sort of salt in the wound dance, in his post-fight interview, he didn't even really acknowledge Shogun, who's a legend. And I understand he's excited about the big win, that seems like that's a time to defer to the retiring legend and just give him the spotlight for a second. So I don't think Ihor, despite the very quick finish, made too many fans in this one.
No, he definitely did not. I don't think he'll be held against him in the long run, but at the moment, I don't think there were very, very many Ihor Pereira fans out there.
Yes. So Mauricio Shogun announcing before this fight that this would be his last MMA match. So once again, I feel like a broken record, Eric. How do you feel about this retirement and the likelihood to stick, and just any reflection on Shogun's career?
I didn't believe him at all when it was announced, but he really doubled down on it this last week. He's like, I despise when these fighters have these big retirements and they just come back. It makes it completely meaningless. I'm not going to do that. This is it. So I'm going to take him at his word that this is it for Shogun, who has been on the wind down for like 15 years, but the time has finally come. I don't know. Where do you even start at Shogun? Perhaps he'll always be most associated with Pride, where he had his prime years, went undefeated in their middleweight division, which is 205 pounds. Of course, the 2005 Pride middleweight Grand Prix is maybe even his crowning achievement, defeating the likes of Alistair Overeem and Quentin Jackson and Little Nog to win that tournament. When he went to the UFC, people were already saying his best days were behind him, and perhaps that was true, but he still became the champion of that division, of course, losing it to John Jones, and he went on to fight in that division for 15 years. It was his longevity was remarkable.
Yes, his longevity. I mean, he is the last of the Pride fighters fighting in the UFC, so no more Pride alumni competing.
Robbie Lawler has a fight under the Pride banner, and he's still trucking for it. So.
Okay, all right. I guess that counts. I got the chance to see Shogun win that UFC light heavyweight title at UFC 113 in Montreal by KOing Lyoto Machida, and so that is a fond memory for me as well. But you also can't talk about Shogun without talking about the Dan Henderson fight at UFC 139. I think it's probably the best fight in UFC history, the best that I can recall, at least right now. And I know that there's some contention about that, but just an incredible, incredible fight. And even though he was on the losing end of that fight, you know, there was no shame in that. And he would ultimately go on to rematch Dan Henderson later, losing that one as well. But that first one, just one of the greatest MMA fights ever.
Yeah, one of the greatest fights of all time, one that's already been inducted into the UFC's Hall of Fame class. That's perhaps the fight that he'll always be remembered for, one that probably should have been scored as a draw, so I don't even hold the loss against him in that one. It was an absolute war. And of course, on the exact same night as Eddie Alvarez and Michael Chandler having another all-time great fight over on Bellator.
Yes, definitely. One of the greatest nights in MMA history. All right. So why don't you quickly run down some of the, you know, the key fights remaining on this card. I'm sure you want to mention the Bonfim brothers and Jelton Almeida. We've got a lot to cover in the second half of the show. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'll give some quick thoughts on here. We have Bruno Fiera defeating Gregory Rodriguez by knockout in 4 minutes. A fantastic knockout on short notice against a tough opponent. Thiago Moises defeating, oh my God, am I actually going to try this name? Melquizel Costa. there are going to be some mispronunciations here, guys. yeah, he defeats him by rear naked choke at four minutes and 5 seconds of the second round. A pretty good win for Moises, who's a very talented fighter. We have Gabriel Bonfim, the second of the Bonfim brothers that fought on this card, defeating Mornier Lizez by guillotine choke in just 49 seconds. A very impressive debut. Jayton Almeida defeating Shamil Abdurakhimov by TKO at 2 minutes and 56 seconds of the second round. Almeida is an absolute monster and the scariest guy on the rise at heavyweight or light heavyweight right now. He's had no trouble just mauling any of his opponents to this point. We have Cody Stammen defeating Luan Lacerda by unanimous decision, 29-28 all. I actually had the scorecard the other way around, but it was a very close fight. So Cody Stammen ultimately getting his arm raised regardless here. We have the second Bonfim brother, Ismael, defeating Terrence McKinney by knockout at 2 minutes and 17 seconds of the second round. Perhaps the overall performance of the night by any fighter on this card, complete with a spectacular flying knee knockout that I'm sure will make all of the headlines. And we have Nicholas Dalby defeating Warley Alves by split decision. I do not remember this fight nor how I scored it. It happened a very long time ago. Josiane Nunes defeating Zara Farin by unanimous decision, 29-28 all. I remember I scored it the same way. And starting off the night, oh so long ago, Daniel Marcos defeating Salmon Oliveira by TKO at 2 minutes and 18 seconds of the second round. And that was UFC 283. I felt like Excalibur there.
Yes, performance of the night bonuses going to Jelton Almeida, Ismael Bonfim, and fight of the night going to Jamahal Hill versus Glover Teixeira. Kinda, you know, Gilbert Burns feels a little cruddy that he wasn't able to get a performance bonus considering how easily he made it look to run through a veteran in Neil Magny.
Giving out one more performance bonus probably would have just bankrupted the company, obviously. So they couldn't do it.
Well, yes. And that might be a topic that we discuss shortly, because it is time to look back, not on last night, but last year, the year that was in MMA and a little bit in boxing, in what we call the post-MMA-ish award. So we had a series of categories that we posted in the Discord, and the Discord audience got to vote on them. And now we're going to talk about them and reveal our picks as well. We'll go through some predictions for 2023, what we think is going to happen. And so why don't we probably should discuss this ahead of time, but maybe we take it one category at a time. I will start at the top with the female fighter of the year. So the female fighter of the year nominees were Larissa Pacheco of the PFL, Zhang Wei Li of the UFC, Liz Carmouche of Bellator, Manon Fiorro, Chris Cyborg of Parts Unknown, and the boxer Katie Taylor. Pacheco having that huge run in the PFL tournament and avenging her losses to Kayla Harrison. You have Zhang Wei Li with her big rematch and ultimately regaining her championship. And then you had Liz Carmouche becoming the Bellator champion, Manon Fiorro winning 3 fights this year, Chris Cyborg winning in MMA and 2 fights in boxing, and then Katie Taylor having 2 big wins in boxing, but mainly the big one that Madison Square Garden headlined her against Amanda Serrano. So with that said, who was your pick for female fighter of the year, Eric?
My female fighter of the year for 2022 was Zhang Wei Li. Started off the year with a really fun fight, complete with a knockout of the year candidate against Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who is arguably the greatest strawweight of all time. So a huge win that set her up for a title fight against Carla Esparza, who she absolutely ran through with a very creative submission win as well to reclaim her strawweight title. Just a very good year for Zhang Wei Li.
Yes, a tremendous year for her. Hard to argue with that. In fact, most of the Discord, that would be their pick as well. That would also be the John Pollock pick. So John Pollock going with Zhang Wei Li for Female Fighter of the Year. But of course, me being the contrarian, no, that's not my pick. My pick is Katie Taylor. Even though Katie Taylor only fought twice, and yes, she did not fight in MMA, that fight against Serrano at MSG is such a pivotal moment, I think, for women's boxing, where they did such a massive gate at such a huge venue. The fight itself was amazing, candidate for fight of the year, and it really sets up a potential rematch, especially now there's some problems with that, because it seems like her promoter and Serrano's promoter, Jake Paul, are having difficulty in coming to terms on that fight. But when it does happen, it will be huge. And I think it will, in the long run, be really regarded as one of the pivotal moments in female boxing. And for that reason, Katie Taylor is my female fighter of the year.
Oh, there you have it. And on to our next category, I suppose, then, male fighter of the year. Our nominees, of course, are the UFC featherweight champion, Alexander Volkanovski. We have the newly crowned UFC middleweight champion, Alex Pereira. We have Islam Makhachev, who claimed the lightweight title in this past year. Newly crowned Bellator middleweight champion, Johnny Eblen. And, of course, Aljamain Sterling, the UFC's bantamweight champion, who many thought would lose his crown in 2022, but he did anything but, defending his title twice. So, we will start off with your pick then, Phil.
Yeah, I think this one was a struggle for me. I mean, I'm still undecided to a certain degree between Volkanovski, Paheya, and Islam Makhachev. Islam Makhachev was my prediction for the 2022 Fighter of the Year when we did this show last year. Volkanovski, only 2 fights. Same with Makhachev. Paheya, of course, 3 fights, although not quite as impressive of victories, minus, of course, the Israel Adesanya fight, which was incredible. With all that said, my pick is going to be Alexander Volkanovski. I just thought that the quality of win versus Max Holloway was so exceptionally high. And, you know, he was prepared to fight again. He was a backup for that Islam Makhachev versus Charles Oliveira fight. And so just for the quality of those wins and establishing himself essentially atop the pound-for-pound rankings at the end of the year, he is my pick for the 2022 Male Fighter of the Year. And thankfully, we're going to get to see him versus Islam Makhachev fairly soon, assuming everybody stays healthy.
Yeah, I actually thought this is one of the easier categories to choose for me of the ones. I thought it was fairly clearly Alexander Volkanovski. He just... He had a spectacular performance in both of his fights. First defeating the Korean Zombie. When people went into that fight, the expectation was, yeah, Volkanovski is probably going to win, but it's going to be a really entertaining fight while it lasts. Well, he looked so much quicker than the Korean Zombie in that fight that it was really just a three-round massacre until he finally got the finish. And after that fight, you know what everyone said? They're like, well, the Korean Zombie is washed. He's too old. He's taking too much damage. He's done. And now we'll see what he can do against Max Holloway, who's looked fantastic in his last couple. Well, guess what? He made Max Holloway look old, washed, and fragile. That's how good Alexander Volkanovski was this last year. To cap it all off, he claims the top spot on the pound-for-pound list in the world after Kamaru Usman's defeat. Really a spectacular year for Alexander Volkanovski, who will look to have perhaps an even more spectacular 2023 as he attempts to challenge Islam Makhachev for his lightweight title. But yeah. The Discord did disagree with us because Discord overwhelmingly voted for Alex Pereira as the 2022 Male Fighter of the Year.
Yeah. So as easy as it was for you, it was just as easy for the Discord members to vote against Alex Volkanovski. And our overlord, John Pollock, his pick for the 2022 Male Fighter of the Year, Alex Volkanovski. So, Alex Volkanovski sweeping the board of post-show hosts. So
but he just doesn't connect with the fans. Isn't that what they used to say about him? I guess it's still true.
Yes. Maybe more cooking shows will get him over next year. All right. Moving on through the awards. We're now going to look at the 2022 KO of the year, probably one of the easier categories to decide. We had Leon Edwards' incredible head kick of Kamaru Usman, Zhang Weili versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk, spinning back fist, knockout, Michael Chandler, front kick to the face of Tony Ferguson, and Marlon Vera, head kick knockout of legend Dominic Cruz. The Discord was unanimous. I'm pretty sure we're unanimous, Eric. Who was your pick for the knockout of the year?
There may have been more spectacular and brutal creative knockouts, but there's nothing that will stick in the minds of MMA fans more than Leon Edwards down big on the scorecards, landing a high kick that knocks Kamaru Usman out cold, ending his undefeated UFC run at 15 consecutive wins and crowning Leon Edwards as the new welterweight champion. One of the greatest moments in the history of the company, really, made even better perhaps by the commentary who were in the middle of writing this man off. Just before John Anik says that line, but that's not the cloth in which Leon Edwards is cut. And then there's the knockout. Just spectacular. Absolutely spectacular.
Yes, and that too is my pick, and that too is the John Pollock pick for the knockout of the year. I don't think that there's much more that I can say that is better than how you described it, and we'll actually have a little bit of an opportunity to talk about it later in the nominees as well.
All right, moving right along to submission of the year then, starting off with Jessica Andrade submitting Amanda Lemos with a standing arm triangle. Next up, we have Zhang Weili with a crucifix rear naked choke against Carla Esparza, one that I can't say I've seen before. Paul Craig submitting Nikita Krylov with a triangle, and typical Paul Craig fashion. Corey McKenna submitting Miranda Granger with a Von Flue choke. And of course, Yuri Prochazka's rear naked choke over Glover Teixeira that crowned him as the UFC's light heavyweight champion at the end of a very wild fight where he was down on the scorecards, not unlike Leon Edwards. Starting off with you, Phil, what was your submission of the year?
So my submission of the year is Yuri Prochazka defeating Glover Teixeira in that light heavyweight battle. While the submission itself is one we see all the time in MMA, I think much like the KO of the year, it was all about the circumstances. The fact that it was such a wild fight, and it really did look like if the fight had continued just a little bit longer, it was going to go to the judges' scorecards and Glover Teixeira was going to get the victory. So just the fact that Yuri was able to persevere through such a incredible back and forth, tough fight and secure that last second submission, that's why it is my submission of the year.
I decided to go in a different direction. I went with Jessica Andrade's standing arm triangle against Amanda Lemos. I thought this was an excellent submission victory, one that you very rarely see in the sport. It really just showcased Andrade's ridiculous strength against a very tough opponent in Amanda Lemos. And guess what, Phil? The Discord agrees with both of us because it is a tie between Amanda Lemos's standing arm triangle, or Jessica Andrade's standing arm triangle, that is, against Lemos, and Yuri Prochazka's rear naked choke over Glover Teixeira.
That's not what I see. I see that Yuri is the winner.
I see it differently. I see three votes for Andrade and three votes for Yuri.
I see four votes for Yuri.
Well, I think we're gonna have to look. We're gonna have to look at the people here.
Yeah, I think you must. There's count.
Stop the count.
There's two. There's a hanging Chad. That's a reference for before your time, I believe.
Yeah, I didn't follow that one.
Well, I see four votes for.
We will trust Phil here.
Yes. Here. But as important as the award for the Discord is, we must hear from our resident expert, Mr. John Pollock, and his choice for submission of the year. The Pollock pick is Yuri Prochazka versus Glover Teixeira. So another feather for that submission over the others. Yes. All right. So now moving down the awards list from submission of the year, KO of the year, it's time to talk about fight of the year. So we just mentioned it, Yuri Prochazka defeating Glover Teixeira. We have Charles Oliveira, somebody who's no stranger to fight of the year contenders, defeating Justin Gaethje. Dustin Poirier versus Michael Chandler. Both men always in incredible fights, and that fight delivering everything we expected and more. Stephen Thompson versus Kevin Holland, a fight really stood out at the end of the year. Khamzat Chimaev versus Gilbert Burns, a fight that we talked about earlier today when we were reviewing Gilbert Burns' latest victory over Neil Magny. Luke Rockhold versus Paula Costa, one of the most disgusting fights in UFC history. And the aforementioned Katie Taylor versus Amanda Serrano. So with the nominees there, which one is your pick for fight of the year?
I went with Yuri Prochazka versus Glover Teixeira. This fight was just absolutely ridiculous. 25 minutes of insane momentum changes, both guys being rocked, submission attempts from both fighters, and with Glover finally starting to pull away at the fight in the final minutes, Yuri mounting that last-minute comeback to secure the rear naked choke finish and win the UFC light heavyweight championship. One of the wildest fights in the history of the sport.
Yes, and that too is my pick. This one was actually quite difficult. I think just sort of the circumstances of it, you know, being a title fight and being back and forth in the last minute nature of it. But the Dustin Poirier versus Michael Chandler one was really incredible. And as I already mentioned, you know, I have a soft spot for boxing, and that Katie Taylor versus Amanda Serrano fight was tremendous. So I think of, you know, those were the three that I was really struggling with. But ultimately, I did pick Jiří Procházka versus Glover Teixeira, and so did John Pollock. That was as well his 2022 fight of the year.
Did we get the Discord's vote on that one?
The Discord almost, not quite unanimous, but definitely definitive, Jiří Procházka versus Glover Teixeira as well.
Yeah, it was really a spectacular fight. Perhaps the most entertaining light heavyweight title fight I can recall. It was a spectacular one, one that will be remembered for mm-hmm. pretty much as long as we talk about the names Glover Teixeira and Jiří Procházka. Especially as Glover walks into his retirement now. Anyways, moving on to round of the year, we're going to start with Dustin Poirier versus Michael Chandler, the first round of their fights. The first round of Michael Chandler fights, man, they are always crazy. And this one was no exception because he is going out for the kill from the opening bell here. And he nearly gets it. He hurts Dustin a couple times. Dustin goes as far as to say afterwards that he nearly had him finished at one point, but Poirier manages to hold on, and he fires back, practically dropping Chandler before the end of the round. Really spectacular stuff. Our next contender here is Charles Oliveira versus Justin Gaethje, the first round of their fight. I was going to say for the UFC lightweight championship, but it was only half for the UFC lightweight championship after Charles Oliveira missed weight. So strange circumstances, but a very entertaining bout where, much like Michael Chandler in the aforementioned fight, Justin Gaethje was just swinging for the fences, drops Oliveira a couple times, but in typical Charles Oliveira fashion, he manages to fire back, drop Justin Gaethje, and secure the submission. We have the first round of Jiří Procházka versus Glover Teixeira. We just talked about the insanity of that fight, although you could really, I feel like you could nominate all five rounds of this one, more or less. And then we have Sumadurji versus Matt Schnell. This fight, not as high profile as the other ones, but perhaps the craziest of the bunch, with Schnell getting dropped and rocked over and over and over again just to fire back and get the late stoppage victory in the round. So four very strong contenders. Which one did you go with, Phil?
Definitely, yeah, four very strong contenders, but I ultimately went with Poirier versus Chandler round one. I mean, both of these men always in exciting fights, along with, you know, the next candidate on this list, Charles Oliveira and Justin Gaethje. But yeah, just the back and forth action of that, and just as well, you know, the fact that we anticipated it was going to be a barn burner and it was delivering. And yeah, it was absolute chaos. And everything that we love about watching these two guys fight. So that's why it was my pick for round of the year.
Yeah, it really lived up to the expectations that were thrown at it. And I found this was perhaps the hardest category to choose from because these were all very entertaining fights. But at the end of it, I decided to go with Charles Oliveira and Justin Gaethje, the first round or only round of their fight. Just a spectacular, spectacular, hard-hitting fight. Just what you would expect between these two guys who were exclusively in wars, not unlike Poirier and Chandler. The Discord went with round one of Dustin Poirier versus Michael Chandler. And what was John Pollock's pick, Phil?
John Pollock's pick for round of the year goes to Michael Chandler versus Dustin Poirier, round one. There you have it. Yes. So moving on to the next category, event of the year. Six excellent events. UFC on ESPN, Santos versus Hill. UFC Fight Night Rodriguez versus Lemos. UFC 281 Adesanya versus Pereira. UFC on ESPN Thompson versus Holland. Once again mentioned, UFC 275 Teixeira versus Procházka. And the surprising entrant on this list, the PFL World Championship on pay-per-view. Who would have thought?
For the 16 people who actually watched this, they may have enjoyed what they saw.
Yes, yes. I mean, before we go with your pick, just worthwhile to just talk about that PFL pay-per-view. I mean, yes, absolutely bizarre that, you know, PFL would go to pay-per-view with this card. You know, yeah, you've got Kayla Harrison, who's, you know, developing into a big name in MMA, but the idea of with no real pay-per-view drawing experience, asking people to buy this event on Black Friday, I believe it was as well. But so, yeah, probably not a large audience for it. But in terms of action and great moments, it was a very, very good card. And that was sort of exasperated. I don't know. It was just there was exclamation was put on it with that incredible comeback win, or upset win, I should say, rather, by Pacheco over Harrison in the main event. But with all that said, what was your event of the year, Eric?
Well, I'm glad you did all the preamble for that PFL card, because that was not my card of the year. I actually went with UFC 281, Adesanya versus Pereira. Multiple title changes, some dramatic finishes, a great fight with Dustin Poirier and Michael Chandler. Just a really fun night of fights, and I thought it was the best card of the year.
Yes, it was tremendous. And my pick is UFC 281, Adesanya versus Pereira. I think the fact that, you know, another Madison Square Garden show, Izzy's, you know, fought there now multiple times. And the fact that the main event was such a great fight and the whole card was really tremendous. We already talked about Poirier versus Chandler on that. And the Discord also agreed by selecting the watermelon, indicating juiciness, flavorfulness, and just very satisfying. UFC 281, Adesanya versus Pereira. And John Pollock, event, UFC 281. Although he does have an honorable mention for an unlisted item. He went off grid. UFC London in March.
A spectacular crowd and atmosphere to that one. And if we're going to go with that one, I would actually say UFC France one-upped UFC London in terms of crowd energy. So I'll give a shout out to UFC France. On to our next category, then, comeback of the year. And if there was ever a year for comeback of the year, it was this year, because there was a lot of spectacular ones. Starting off with, of course, Leon Edwards stopping Kamaru Usman down on the scorecards with a minute remaining in their fight. Next off, we have Alex Pereira stopping Israel Adesanya in the final round of their middleweight title fight. Also one where Pereira was down on the scorecards and it looked like Israel Adesanya was about to cruise to victory. We have Matt Schnell's comeback versus Suma Durji. I just mentioned it when we were talking about the round of the year. This was truly spectacular. If you haven't seen this, I would seriously suggest seeking it out. Drew Dober coming back versus Terrence McKinney. Drew Dober was dropped twice in the opening seconds of this one, but comes back to the secure finish before the end of the round. And we have Jiří Procházka submitting Glover Teixeira in the final 30 seconds of their fight. The comeback of the year is Leon Edwards stopping Kamaru Usman with a minute remaining in their fight. Is this like, do we have to, or
no, that is the consensus pick. That is the pick of the Discord. That is the pick of myself, and that is the pick of the honorable John Pollock. So
truly just a spectacular moment. It's something that will be very hard to ever measure up to for a guy to defeat the pound for pound king a minute away from tying the overall record for a UFC win streak. Down on the scorecards. He had already lost to Usman going into the fight. It was just a great moment.
All right, moving on to the next category, rivalry of the year. Alex Pereira versus Israel Adesanya, of course, carrying over their kickboxing history to MMA. Francis Ngannou versus the UFC, a rivalry that has seemed to continue into 2023. Paulo Costa versus the UFC, constant battles over contract negotiations. Ariel Helwani versus Paddy Pimblett. And Danny Sabatello versus Rofion Staats. rivalry that, you know, made for good build up, but when it came to fight time, not so much.
I mean, you can only expect so much from a Danny Sabatello fight at this point. So, you know, a lot of the time that's what it is. It's the hype that gets you invested in the outcome, and the fight is not always going to live up to it. But I went with Francis Ngannou versus the UFC. I thought this was the most captivating, real rivalry of the year. That really ended with Francis Ngannou departing from the company. So, an unfortunate ending to this year-long saga, but I think a lot of credit has to go to Francis Ngannou for sticking up for not only himself, but every fighter in the company.
Yeah, and I think I, as well, just maintained a certain level of consistency. You know, he said things he wanted. He said he's been consistent throughout this whole process, before his contract expired, after his contract expired, and now that he's been quote-unquote released from the UFC. He's been very consistent about what he wants, the stringent nature of the UFC contracts, and how, you know, fighters are essentially not powerless, but very diminished power when taking on the UFC. That was not my pick. My pick was actually Alex Pereira versus Israel Adesanya. Just a great rivalry that really started from the kickboxing history. I remember when you first saw Alex Pereira debut in the UFC, we knew that he was there for the opportunity to fight Israel Adesanya. He was going to get fast-tracked, and if he was able to get the wins with the few guys that the UFC put in front of him, he was going to get a chance at Israel Adesanya. And of course, he did at UFC 21 at Madison Square Garden. It was a great performance where he was down on the scorecards, but was able to get a finish late. And it looks like that rivalry is going to continue, because despite three victories by Alex, a fourth fight, second in MMA, seems like an inevitability, and I don't think anybody would be complaining about that. And?
No, definitely not.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Eric. Uh-oh. Are you having technical difficulties? Oh, no. You're back. Okay, good.
There are a lot of difficulties right now, but I'm trying so hard to power through with them.
Okay. All right. Well, hopefully you can hang on for just a little bit longer. The Discord pick actually goes to Ariel Helwani versus Paddy Pimblett. Certainly a rivalry that made a lot of noise towards the end of the year, with Paddy Pimblett, going on, having, Dana White on his podcast, or was it Paddy Pimblett on Dana White's podcast? I don't know who was on whose podcast, but it was just a disgusting assault on Ariel Helwani. Ariel Helwani, of course, coming back with receipts for days on the whole story. This is a topic that's been done to death. And, you know, Ariel 10-7-ing another MMA fighter who was stupid enough to challenge him. And so that is the Discord pick for the rivalry of the year. But that is different from the John Pollock pick. John Pollock pick for rivalry of the year: Alex Pereira versus Israel Adesanya. So, yes.
All solid choices. Moving on to story of the year. We start off with the Fighter Pay saga continuing, of course. This is for all of MMA, but largely the UFC and its fighters. The fighters are not getting a large portion of the share, so to speak, and that continued to be a huge topic in 2022, spurred on largely by the Francis Ngannou's largely sitting out and eventually leaving the company. So, a huge story. We move on to UFC's 279's Fight Week Insanity. So what happened this week was basically the top three fights on this card all got shuffled around. So every fighter in the top three fights ended up with a new opponent on weigh-in day. Something I can never recall seeing before, and I doubt we'll see again following this. Really, really strange times. PFL moving to pay-per-view. This was interesting choice. I think we've already went into... It was a very questionable move, and perhaps a move that PFL will continue to experiment with in this upcoming year. We will see how successful they are. Francis Ngannou's contract very much ties into the entire fighter pay saga. We have the James Krause betting scandal. This really rocked the final months of the year. James Krause, of course, in deep, deep trouble for gambling with insider information on his own fighters, even at times, and ultimately being removed from the sport altogether. We have Douglas Crosby's horrible judging. I feel like this is one that could have went to a lot of judges, but Douglas Crosby in particular had some suspect scorecards throughout the year. And finally, Nate Diaz leaving the UFC. Always a very tough choice when we look back on the year that was the biggest story, but I'm going to go with Francis Ngannou leaving the UFC as the biggest story of the year.
Wow, Eric, you're flying solo on this one. That is a big surprise. I mean, not that that wasn't a big story, because, you know, having the heavyweight champion leave as champion to pursue, potentially boxing or fight with another promotion is a huge story. But ultimately, that wasn't my pick. My pick was the James Krause betting scandal, which is also the Discord pick and also the John Pollock pick. And I think the reason for that is multifold. First of all, I mean, it was a betting scandal that not just affected a UFC trainer, it affected all of his fighters, it affected multiple fighters. It ultimately led to the removal of UFC betting from Alberta and Ontario. Ontario only being reinstated just this weekend for UFC 283. We know that there is some type of federal investigation going on into it. There's the state of Nevada is investigating it as well. And so there could be more revelations that come. So what is 2022's story of the year may turn out to even be 2023's story of the year. So for all those reasons, that's why it is my pick as well. Yes. All right. Moving on. Upset of the year. Always fun. The upsets. Larissa Pacheco defeating Kayla Harrison at the PFL on pay-per-view. Kayla Harrison having two previous wins over Larissa. Alex Pereira defeating Israel Adesanya. Even though Pereira did have wins in kickboxing, he had far less experience in MMA. Leon Edwards with that incredible comeback win over Kamaru Usman. Poor Piotr Jan. Sean O'Malley defeating him in a very close fight and what many would say is controversial, although it was a competitive fight, so I don't know how controversial it was. Although there was a fair amount of disgruntled viewers with that one. Aljamain Sterling also defeating Piotr Jan in a fight that was far less controversial than the Sean O'Malley one. And in boxing, Dmitry Bivol defeating Canelo Alvarez, his first loss in several years since losing to Floyd Mayweather. So with all those, what was your upset of the year, Eric?
I went with Larissa Pacheco defeating Kayla Harrison. I mean, she was the only fighter to go the distance with Kayla Harrison before that. So she had, someone did it. Sorry, I say that, but actually in Kayla Harrison's first fight of the year, she went the distance as well. So there you have it. But nonetheless, I think everyone expected Kayla Harrison to pick up another win here. She's just been so dominant. But Larissa Pacheco really brought the fight, and she got her arm raised deservedly at the end of it. So that's my upset of the year.
Yes, it is also the Discord pick for the upset of the year, overwhelmingly, and is the John Pollock pick for the upset of the year, and it is my pick for upset of the year. I think just the fact that there was already two losses, and Larissa really showed so much improvements for this fight. I mean, her defensive wrestling and her ability to escape even when she was taken down, and not just escape but even create offense off of her back, really made the difference in this fight. And I look forward to the two going at it again, because I think that the line will be, you know, very, very close, and it's kind of one of the few, if not only, marquee fight that the PFL has right now.
Yeah, I mean, like Leon Edwards versus Kamaru Usman, a big upset, but these were, you know, two of the top welterweights in the world. You can say the same thing with the likes of the Piotr Jan fights, Alex Pereira, big underdog, not a lot of MMA experience, but does have two wins against Israel Adesanya. Well, this is one where Kayla Harrison was an astronomical favorite, and she had already beat Pacheco twice. So a hell of a win, and very deservingly our upset of the year. I guess we're moving right on into worst fight of the year. And, you know, every single year there's so many cards that there's bound to be a lot of contenders when we go back and talk about the worst fight of the year. And this year was really no exception. So I'm going to run down the list of our worst fight of the year nominees, starting with Carla Esparza versus Rose Namajunas 2. The next one on the list here is Carla Esparza versus Rose Namajunas 2. We also have Carla Esparza versus Rose Namajunas 2. And our final nominee is Carla Esparza versus Rose Namajunas 2. So this was a very difficult choice for me. But no, this fight was so fucking bad. This was one of the worst fights in the history of the sport. The only thing that saves it from being the worst fight in the history of the sport was that there was a time limit. Because if there wasn't a time limit, they would still be circling each other to this day. Absolutely dreadful. Of course, it's my pick. It's your pick. It's the Discord's pick. I assume it's John Pollock's pick. It is everyone in the world's pick. Please keep these fighters far, far, far away from each other, because this was in a league of its own in terms of bad fights.
Yes, and much like the Jiří Procházka versus Glover Teixeira fight, you know, was a pick because of the circumstances, the high profile nature of the fight. This sort of fits in as well, not only because it's just awful on its own merits, but the fact that it was a title fight in such a prominent position also adds to the fact that it's just utterly awful. Trash, puke, poop emoji, all of that, or Carla Esparza versus Rose Namajunas 2. All right, moving on to the next category. Interesting one. They really dropped the ball on. So sort of somebody made some mistakes, somebody screwed up, somebody got some, just didn't put it together, just a fumble through the year. So nominees for the fumbles of the year, Bellator with promoting their shows. I mean, what's the last notable Bellator show that you can remember? I mean, they do have an event coming up on February 4th, but even that, I mean, we could be very critical on the promotion of that one. The PFL on pay-per-view, we talked about that, just like, who is the audience for this event? Yes, it was a good card after the fact, but in terms of luring an audience, you've seen Francis Ngannou not coming to terms, UFC letting their heavyweight champion go. Tommy Fury not fighting Jake Paul. I mean, Tommy Fumbles, as he's like to be called by one Jake Paul. Of course, that fight does sound like it's booked, but who knows if it's actually going to materialize. Khamzat Chimaev missing weight for a huge fight with Nate Diaz. And really just screwing up that entire UFC 279 fight card. And the UFC once again in 2022, letting a year go by and John Jones not getting booked for a fight. So those are the nominees for they really dropped the ball on. Eric, what was your pick?
I, of course, picked the UFC with Francis Ngannou, just a huge fumbling of perhaps a guy who could have been a breakout star for this promotion and is now no longer in it. But I've already talked a lot about that. It is my pick, but I just want to go in on Bellator for a second. This promotion, man, they, for so long, they've been the number two in MMA, but I don't even know when they're running cards half the time anymore. And I feel like I'm as in touch with the sport as anyone. And I have no idea when Bellator is running half the time. They go at completely random times. Like sometimes they have cards in the middle of the fucking afternoon. Sometimes they switch days too. Sometimes it's randomly on a Saturday instead of a Friday. They don't promote anything. It's a complete disaster of a promotion right now. Maybe they're still number two in the world. I don't know, but it doesn't feel like it. Even when the fights and the shows are good, and I do think Bellator has actually stepped up, the quality of their production. Like there's less huge gaps in between fights and whatnot, but if nobody's watching it, who even cares? It doesn't matter. So I thought this was a dreadful year for Bellator MMA.
Yeah, they seem to not have a lot of traction, and there's just not a lot of emotional connection to what they're doing. I think, you know, we've been critical of PFL. You know, some of the cards are just woefully slow paced. But they at least have a format that's interesting. You know, the fighters are fighting for something. Bellator has tournaments, but you don't know when they're going to happen and get completed. You know, a PFL season will get completed within the time frame, and somebody is going to walk away with $1 million. And they've been aggressive at signing people. So I think who's number two? I think it's a debate now, at least. Like, Bellator was the clear number two, and now it's a debate. Now, that being said, my pick for they really dropped the ball on. Oh, this one's tough. Part of me wants to say PFL. Part of me wants to say Khamzat Chimaev. But the reason why I'm not going to say Khamzat Chimaev is because, yes, he dropped the ball on a huge potential matchup with Nate Diaz. You know, would have been by far his highest profile UFC fight. I don't think it really makes a difference because the UFC doesn't seem to care that he missed weight by so much. He's either going to move up or they'll let him try welterweight one more time. And they're going to put him in a prominent position, right? He's going to headline a card or be right up there. So while, yes, he dropped the ball and the opportunity to fight Nate Diaz and most likely defeat him, I don't think that there's really going to be too many consequences for that. So my pick is going to be PFL on pay-per-view. Not because it was a bad card. It was a very good card with good fights and good stories, fighters winning $1 million, but just it seems so short-sighted to go to pay-per-view at this point when you really haven't established any marquee names who people have demonstrated that they really are willing to pay for. And then, of course, having this pay-per-view be on Black Friday, Thanksgiving weekend in the United States when people are doing all sorts of other things, putting it on a Friday night as well, just because people are used to buying pay-per-views on Saturdays. That's when they buy MMA pay-per-views. So all of these sort of bizarre business decisions is why I picked them as the ball dropper of the year. They do plan to continue into pay-per-view in 2023, and that will be a topic of the predictions that we do in just a little bit. But that was my pick. It is also the John Pollock pick, PFL dropping the ball on pay-per-view this year. But the Discord, siding with you, Eric. It seems like the letting their UFC champion walk away, a free agent, to go do whatever he wants, boxing, MMA hybrid, MMA. Who knows? Who knows what the future holds for Francis Ngannou, but that seems to be the consensus pick in the Discord for they really dropped the ball on.
Moving on to Broadcaster of the Year, our nominees for 2022, John Anik, Brendan Fitzgerald, Paul Felder, Michael Bisping, and Ariel Helwani. Mostly UFC staff here, of course, from their commentary team, as well as Ariel Helwani, who, of course, does so many things in the sport. I went with John Anik. I think he's the gold standard for commentary, and he adds so much to the UFC broadcast. He had a really good year. And he's kind of like the safe choice, isn't he?
Yeah, safe choice, workhorse. And if anything, he gets better, right? He puts in the work, yeah. You know, has the knowledge. I mean, you already mentioned, you know, that, you know, the key line just before Leon Edwards had his incredible comeback. I mean, that enhances that moment so much. So he's such a pivotal part of the broadcast. My pick was Ariel Helwani. Of course, he has his twice a week show. Last week, it was three times in the week. But he has his twice a week show. But on top of that, he does all this work for BT Sport, covering MMA and WWE. And now he also does work for Showtime. doing boxing, and he did live ringside commentary for the Jake Paul Anderson Silva fight, and I thought he did a tremendous job there. And so Ariel Helwani gets my pick for the broadcaster of the year.
Decided to go with none other than John Anik, who, I mean, we also got a decent amount of votes for Helwani as well as Michael Bisping, but by a decent amount, John Anik is our winner for 2022. How about John Pollock?
John Pollock picked John Anik. John Pollock picked John Anik. John Anik was picked by John Pollock.
Thank you very much.
All right. Next category. Prospect/Breakthrough Fighter of the Year. Aaron Blanchfield. Arnold Allen. Both undefeated fighters. Bilal Muhammad. A bit of an unusual pick because he's somebody... It's hard to say that he broke through necessarily this year, but he established himself as right up there as someone to be a title contender very, very soon. Sergey Pavlovich, another terrifying heavyweight. Roman Dolidze, with an incredible run, just dominating his opposition this year. So, of those picks, my pick is Bilal Muhammad. And the reason why I picked Bilal Muhammad is, yes, he's somebody who's been in the UFC a long time. He has wins over a variety of fighters, but he always sort of seemed like somebody that was going to be more of a gatekeeper type fighter and was always labeled as unexciting. And not to say he suddenly became the most thrilling fighter in the UFC, but he did finish a very highly touted prospect in Sean Brady. His game looks way more well-rounded than it has in the past. And as I just stated, he seems extremely close to getting that welterweight title shot. So for all of those reasons, Bilal Muhammad is my pick for prospect/breakthrough fight of the year. And he is the consensus Discord pick as well. What about you, Eric?
I went with Roman Dolidze. I mean, coming into this year, he kind of just felt like another guy in the division. I mean, he had a solid like 3-1 record in the UFC, so it's not like he was in the middle of the pack or anything, but he hadn't made a name for himself. He would just be another name you'd see on the prelims, perhaps. Well, this year he comes out, he knocks out Kyle Daugavs, he knocks out Phil Haas, and then he knocks out Jack Hermanson, who's actually a fairly high-ranked opponent. So when I think of breakthrough, that's exactly what I think of a year like that, and I had to give up to him.
I don't disagree. I mean, it's particularly that last victory over Hermanson, where he just completely like controlled him on the ground, you know?
Yeah, Hermanson, it was such an impressive performance, like one that you watch and you're like, oh, okay, this guy, he's legit.
Definitely. John Pollock pick, though. John Pollock pick. Are you ready for it? John Pollock doesn't like our nominees. He likes his nominee. Shavkat Rakhmonov. Now, in retrospect, yes, this is probably somebody that should have been on our nominee list, but he did only have two fights in 2022, but nonetheless, dominant performances, and somebody who is definitely going to be challenging near the top of the division very, very soon. So I have no problem with that John Pollock pick.
No. That is a great pick by John, and I think the only reason that at least I didn't think to nominate him is I already think of him as one of the best fighters in that division. So it feels, even though he is right, he did make that name for himself this year, it feels like he's already like I rank him just as highly as I rank Khamzat Chimaev. So he's a hell of a fighter, and this could be a really big year for him in 2023.
All right.
What category are we at now? Prospect.
What the fuck?
Here we go.
What yes. the fuck, Eric? Aren't you paying attention?
The what the fuck moment of the year. We start off with Luke Rockhold smearing his blood all over Paulo Costa in what was a a very gross moment, but also a strangely badass one in Luke Rockhold's final fight for now. We have Anthony Joshua's bizarre post-fight speech after losing to Alexander Usyk. Next up, we have Ernesto Moicano's profanity-laden post-fight interview after submitting Brad Riddell. I'll just say that's not my pick, but it's the great. If we had a category for greatest moment of the year, then Ernesto Moicano would win with this post-fight interview because it was so entertaining. And finally, we have the UFC shuffling the top three fights of UFC 279 on 24 hours notice. And I will tell you that is my pick in terms of just that what the fuck is going on kind of moment this year. That one wins in a landslide for me. How about you, Phil?
That was my pick. It was also the John Pollock pick. It was so wild because, yeah, they're changing the top three fights right there. I mean, Khamzat Chimaev misses weight by so much. And what also oddly made it what the fuck for me was I kind of predicted it. Prior to that, at the announced at UFC 278 that Tony Ferguson was joining the card because, you know, there were some rumors that it wasn't selling that great at the box office, so they were looking to beef it up. And I said, you know, Tony's also on this card to fill in case somebody can't make the main event. And I assumed that would be Hamza because of, you know, potential weight issues. And lo and behold, it happens. But just because, you know, I thought of it as a possibility doesn't mean that it still didn't, you know, just like hit me over the head like a bag of hammers, especially considering the other fights that had to be rearranged on that card. So, and I mean, with only 24 hours to go, just utterly crazy. And then, of course, you also had the backstage antics that led to Kevin Holland taking on Khamzat Chimaev, and there was all sorts of other rumors of backstage altercations. So it was an absolutely wild 24 hours leading up to that fight, and still did deliver a very exciting card.
Yeah, it was a very wild night, and it was the Discord's pick as well, although every single nominee got votes on this one.
Excellent, excellent. All right, so it's time for the final award, and I can tell you, John went off-grid again on this one, so there's not going to be a consensus pick. So the award for the low light of the year, the worst moment of the year, we already talked about Patty Pimblett, and Dana White smearing Ariel Helwani. You know, smearing Ariel Helwani is nothing new for Dana White, but for Patty Pimblett, this kind of came out of nowhere, especially considering they had a good history together. Douglas Crosby's horrible judging. I mean, he flew across the country and in 24 hours produced some of the worst scorecards in recent memory. And then TJ Dillashaw losing to Aljamain Sterling with only one shoulder, knowing very well that he was in no condition to fight for weeks on end ahead of time, nonetheless, still competing, and then shortly after, retiring again due to said injury. So those are the three nominees. My pick is Patty Pimblett and Dana White smearing Ariel Helwani. Not because, you know, we haven't seen these things before, but just the complete ridiculous, vicious nature of it. How false it clearly was based on all of the evidence that Ariel Helwani produced, and just this, the level of glee that Dana seems to take in just trashing Ariel. It's perverse. I don't understand it. Okay, you don't like him, but just then let it be, like the Beatles said, let it be. Eric, what's your pick?
I gave a lot of thought to this one, and I have decided to go off grid myself.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Because there was a huge low light that, I forgot to nominate, and that was Frankie Edgar's retirement fight. Just being fed to Chris Gutierrez at a point in his career in which every single person knew Frankie Edgar was going to get knocked out in the first round. An absolutely depressing moment. And a sad send-off to a real legend of the sport. So just Horrible, horrible lowlight, and that's my winner, if you want to call it that.
Well, I was going to say it's an excellent pick, but it's actually not an excellent pick, I guess, is the better way to put it. The Discord overwhelmingly picked, well, not overwhelmingly, it was mostly picked the Patty Pimblett and Dana White smearing aerial. A fair amount of people also picked Douglas Crosby. But as I alluded to just a moment ago, John Pick going off grid with his selection for what could be 2023's low light of the year as well. And the Pollock pick is Dana White launches Power Slap. Right. So I think it's a fair pick, but of course we didn't get any actual Power Slap in 2022. But nonetheless, it was a launch. It was announced. It was recorded. They knew what was going on, and you had the agreement for it to air after AEW Dynamite. And now in retrospect, with everything that's happened already in 2023, of course, Dana White on video, in a physical altercation, to put it mildly, with his wife. And then the launch of this just utterly perverse television show, John Pollock's pick for Dana White launching Power Slap. Can't really argue with that one too much.
No, that's a pretty strong choice there.
All right, so those are the last year awards. We're ready to move on to some predictions. But before we go to 2023 predictions, I think we should review the 2022 predictions. Okay, so 2022 predictions. For Fighter of the Year, Eric predicted Surreal Gone. That, you know, not a bad choice, ultimately.
Not a bad choice at all.
No. I picked Islam Makhachev. That, I think, that one was pretty good. I mean, he certainly was on our nominee list. John Pollock, not as good. Max Holloway.
Oh, John, no.
Yeah. I mean, a little rough go for Max. I mean, he lost that huge fight to Alex Volkanovski, and we haven't seen him since. Whether maybe he'll be coming back in 2023. With fight, maybe it'll be at 155. I don't know. But Max Holloway had taken a lot of time off after that Volkanovski loss, and understandable. For Breakthrough Fighter of the Year, Eric's pick was Adrian Yanez.
Oh, yeah, good call.
Yeah, definitely a good call. For me, my pick didn't quite work out, although he still has potential. Demir Ismagulov, recently losing to Armin Tsarukyan. No shame in that, but definitely a fight I thought he was going to win. And then John's pick for Breakthrough Fighter, he just mentioned Armin Tsarukyan, who had some incredible competition in 2023, of course losing to Gamrot, but getting that win against Ismagulov later in the year. We also had the next set of predictions, which were only for Eric. So only for Eric. Over. So, and we've got more coming up. So we'll get to those in a sec. The questions. Will Leon Edwards get a title shot in 2022? Eric said no. Will Francis Ngannou resign with the UFC? Eric said yes.
That
turned out to not happen.
What's happening here?
Will Nate Diaz fight outside the UFC? Eric said no. And that turns out to be true. I mean, he was a free agent, but the UFC dilly-dallied to get him his last fight. And then, of course, there's a non-compete component to it. So Nate Diaz has not fought anywhere outside the UFC. Will the UFC hold a fight night outside the Apex? Yes. In fact, they went right to it. They held several fight nights outside of the Apex, and it seems like they're going to have fewer and fewer Apex events, although there is one coming up in a couple weeks. Who will be the next notable MMA fighter to make a pro wrestling appearance? You said Chris Cyborg. That did not happen. No. I think Daniel Cormier was the actual correct answer on that. Because
it may have been. Yeah, I don't know how. I don't remember the timing of the AEW Andrei Arlovsky appearance. Like, that could have been the year before.
Yeah, I think that was 2021. Because we had talked about that. because we talked about Paige Van Zandt on the show at that time. So who will be the next notable MMA fighter to box? The answer, your answer was Rampage Jackson. Now he was, there was rumors.
Oh, that's a really depressing answer.
There was rumors that he was going to take on Shannon Briggs. So it wasn't the worst answer in the world, but ultimately it was Uriah Hall. Uriah Hall. Who saw that one coming? And then
definitely
just brief,
a surprise.
Will they fight in 2022? Fedor Emelianenko, you said yes, he did not. Nick Diaz, you said no, he did not. Floyd Mayweather, you said no, he had three exhibition matches, if you count those, I don't know.
Yeah, I'll give it to him.
You said John Jones would fight, he did not. You said Khabib Nurmagomedov would not fight, he did not. GSP, you said he would not fight. He did not.
No, he did not.
Zabit Magomed Sharipov. You said he would fight.
That's an insane prediction by me. That was an insane thing of me to say.
Oscar De La Hoya. You said that he would fight and he did not. Henry Cejudo.
Ooh.
You said he would fight and he did not.
So close. So close.
And lastly, Dan Hardy. You said he would not fight, and to everyone's surprise, he did not make a return to boxing and or MMA. Okay. So, with the review out of the way,
okay,
it's time to go for our 2023 predictions. Okay. So, Aaron, who do you feel will be the 2023 fighter of the year?
You know, I see where I went wrong last year, trying to go with someone in such an unpredictable division. I've learned from my mistakes, and this year I'm going to pick Ciryl Gane to be the 2023 Fighter of the Year. I predict he beats John Jones. I predict he beats Stipe Miocic and maybe defends one more time at the end of the year.
I like it. Doubling down on.
Hey, I thought he beat Francis Ngannou last year, so hey, I'm still all in on the Gane train.
Okay. I mean, fair pick. My pick. So now, granted, I have to admit, I'm kind of cheating. I kind of cheated because I changed it based on yesterday's fights.
Oh, you picked Glover Teixeira.
Shogun Hua, actually.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to go with Jamal Hill. He just got hit the title. I think he's going to fight two more times this year, and I'm going to predict that he will win both of those fights, and he will end 2023 with three wins, and he will still be the light heavyweight champion at the end of the year. So my prediction for the 2023 Fighter of the Year will be Jamal Hill.
Very good choice.
John Pollock? John Pollock jacking my 2022 styles. I'm picking Islam Makhachev as the Fighter of the Year. Great pick. I mean, I could totally see him going undefeated. I just wonder how many fights he's going to get in. You know, if he gets in three fights, then definitely. But much like last year, he only got two fights in. So, but from a skill point standpoint, from a skill standpoint, rather, excellent pick, I think. All right. Next. Eric, who do you feel will be the breakthrough fighter of the year in 2023?
Well, you could make the case that he broke through this year. I am going to say he's going to break through even further next year. And Jailton Almeida is my pick as the breakthrough fighter of 2023. I imagine he climbs from his current status as of the timing of this podcast of an unranked fighter to a top five fighter in whatever division he chooses to compete at by the end of the year.
Yes, he's looked amazing as we saw last night. So I think that's an excellent pick. I'm going to go with Jalen Turner.
Oh,
I feel like he's an absolutely huge lightweight. He's had some losses, but as of recently, he's looked absolutely amazing. His last victory over Brad Riddell was an incredibly impressive performance. And I think by the end of the year, he's going to be the number one contender for that lightweight title. I mean, it's an extremely tough division, You know, there's so many incredible fighters, but I think he's going to rise the ranks and have that, like, be right there. He'll definitely be in the title conversation at the end of the year. So that's my pick, Jalen Turner. Perhaps maybe a more risky pick than I made last year, which was
definitely Islam a risky Makhachev. One this year.
Yeah, yeah. John Pollock for his breakthrough fighter of the year. He actually went with two. Well, there was an honorable mention. Ilya Topuria. Of course, Ilya Topuria making all sorts of waves towards the end of the year with dominant performance over, oh my gosh, I already forgot it, camo shorts.
Bryce Mitchell.
Bryce Mitchell, yes. Yes. And, you know, making news for just another person to happily call out Patty Pimblett. But John Pollock also giving an honorable mention to Anatoly Melikin. Do you know Anatoly Melikin?
Name's not ringing a bell right now.
He's in 1FC. That's probably why. I mean, how much 1FC are you watching, Aaron?
I had no idea that John Pollock kept up with 1FC. This is a revelation, really.
John Pollock is yeah, John Pollock. Well, John Pollock, there's a reason why he's our supreme overlord. He oversees all.
No days off, man. Keeping up with one, my God.
He's keeping up with Ryzen. He probably knows what's going on with the forthcoming WFL. Do you remember the WFL? The WFL, they announced that they were going to have a league format. It's supposed to launch in 2023. Well, I mean, where, it's any moment now.
I don't know if that's happening, man. I don't know if that's happening.
Okay.
I will say, for one, 1FC, for anyone who doesn't keep up with one, it is a ton of fun to watch. Like, if you're a casual fight fan and you don't know too much about any fighters or promotions, I don't think you'll have more fun watching any promotion than one. It's really entertaining stuff.
And 1FC is also going to make their American debut from Denver, Colorado on Friday, May 5th, as we see Demetrius Johnson take on Adriano Moraes for the third time. So that should be interesting. You know, now we're talking about four major promotions in America, right? If we count 1FC with PFL, Bellator, and of course the UFC. So that battle for number two spot, I guess, is going to heat up throughout the year. All right. One last prediction category, not so much a prediction category, but more of like a wish. So what is the fight that you want to see the most in 2023?
You know what? I'm going to go with a fight that's already been announced. I am really interested to see John Jones versus Ciryl Gane. I think that is a really interesting fight stylistically. There are a lot of questions regarding John Jones, and I think that will be that's the fight I'm looking most forward to. So that's my wish. Let it happen. Let John Jones not do something horrible or get busted for steroids or whatever John Jones is typical of doing, and let this go without any horrible occurrences.
Yeah, I think that's a great pick. I mean, on top of just being, you know, high quality competition, yeah, we just haven't seen Jones in so long. This being his first fight at heavyweight, there's a lot of intrigue around those aspects of it. Myself, I had a few picks here. I had three. So bear with me. Some might happen. One probably won't. So first I picked Tyson Fury versus Alexander Usyk. Just let's unify those heavyweight titles in boxing. That seems like a reasonable fight that they could make, although boxing's crazy and, you know, so many things just don't happen. Speaking of not happening, Devin Haney versus Gervonta Davis. I would absolutely love to see that fight, but because of promotional beefs, it just seems like that's not going to happen. Gervonta is on Davis. Gervonta Davis is on Showtime, rather, and Devin Haney is on ESPN, I believe, and it just doesn't seem like the two can see eye to eye on that. But for MMA, I do have an MMA pick here for the fight I want to see the most. And I don't think it'll happen because it will bury a contender. Any idea?
I don't know. I have no idea what direction you're going in right now.
I want to see Aaron Blanchfield versus Casey O'Neill.
Oh, yeah, Yeah. I think Casey O'Neill might be injured.
So she recently did an interview on the Ariel Helwani show, and she seems to be fully recovered and back to training.
Okay.
So I think that there is a time for her to, you know, opportunity for her to make a big impact in 2023 and get a title shot. Same thing with Aaron Blanchfield. I mean, it seems a bit rushed, but Blanchfield's performances have been incredible, and we know that the division is thin. And so I think the only real reason why you wouldn't have them fight each other is just to have more contenders potentially. But right now, those are the two biggest prospects in the division, and I'd really like to see them go at it.
That's a really good fight. Yeah, good call.
John Pollock's pick for the fights he wants to see the most are Max Holloway versus Michael Chandler at 155 pounds.
Oh, wow. That is a really good pick. Two completely different styles, but both very entertaining. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, and I could see it happening totally. As well, he had an alternate there. And this one has strong potential for happening. Usman Nurmagomedov versus AJ McKee in the Bellator Lightweight Grand Prix Final.
Yeah, we might very well actually see that one by the end of that tournament. Although there's also a chance that that tournament simply never ends. So, I mean.
Yes. Yes. Or ends in 2027. The way the Bellator books say. Okay. All right. So now it's time for some Eric Marcotte predictions. These ones are exclusively for you, all right?
Oh, yeah.
We'll audit them next year, just like the ones we did earlier. Okay, here we go.
100% this year.
Will the UFC return to Canada in 2023?
No.
No. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, and a big prediction.
Will Jake Paul fight in MMA in 2023?
Yes.
Okay, you think it's going to happen. Of course, Jake Paul signing a deal with PFL to appear on PFL pay-per-view. I think he's definitely legit committed to it, but I wouldn't be surprised if that gets pushed back till 2024. But good on you for committing to that. Okay, will Jake Paul lose a fight in 2023, boxing or MMA?
I think the PFL will be very carefully selecting his opponents, so I'm going to say no. He goes undefeated this year.
Okay. Jake Paul, undefeated in 2023. You heard it here first from Eric Marcotte. Well, I think we already got your answer for this, but might as well, you know, confirm it. Who will be the UFC heavyweight champion at the end of 2023?
Surreal Gone.
Will Valentina Shevchenko fight Amanda Nunes in 2023?
No.
Who will be the male bantamweight champion at the end of
2023? Oh, man. Oh, fuck. That is a good question. Shit. Okay, you know what? Let's take a risk here. Let's take a risk, make things interesting.
Piotr Jan?
No. Marlon Vera is your champion.
Whoa,
at the end of the year.
That is a risky one.
We're going out there.
I mean, yeah, wow. That I definitely would have picked that one. So good on you for the risky pick. Okay. How many pay-per-view events will PFL hold in 2023?
Oh, man. I feel like I want to say zero, but it might be end up being like three or something. This company's out of their mind. It must all be a money laundering scheme. That's the only thing that makes sense. I'll say they do one.
One. Okay. Yeah. One. I think that's a good number. Will Nate Diaz box in 2023?
No, I predict we hear very little from Nate Diaz this year.
Wow, nothing from Nate Diaz. Amazing. Okay. Will Francis Ngannou's next fight be MMA or boxing?
Boxing. I don't think he has a lot of interest in MMA.
Will Khabib Nurmagomedov return to coaching in 2023?
I predict we will see him in somebody's corner throughout the year.
So that's a yes. I think that's a yes. Will Power Slap make it through all 8 episodes of its current run, or will it get canceled before that?
It will make it through all 8 episodes, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Last question before we get into, will these people fight? Who will be the next fighter to get 10-7'd by Ariel Helwani?
I'll just go with the safest bet imaginable and say Jake Shields.
Jake Shields. Okay. Jake Shields. Very good. Very good. All right. Okay. So now, last bit. Simple question. Will the following fighters fight in 2023? Could be boxing or MMA, right? Okay. Or slap fighting, I suppose.
Yeah, whatever.
George St. Pierre.
No.
Nick Diaz.
No.
No. Zabit Magomed Sharipov.
No. No, I can't believe I made that prediction last year.
I don't know if you heard the rumors, but there are rumors circulating that he is planning a return.
It won't happen.
Frankie Edgar.
Oh, I'm going to say Frankie takes the year off, but we haven't heard the last from him.
Okay. Gregor Gillespie.
Yes.
Gregor Gillespie, somebody that we have not heard of in probably as long as Zabit Magomed Sharipov.
It's been a long time, but I predict we'll see Gregor this year.
Dylan Danis.
No.
No. Conor McGregor.
Yes.
Paige Van Zandt.
No, no.
Okay, and the last one. Think hard.
Okay.
Think Hardy. Dan Hardy.
No, he didn't. Dan Hardy will not fight in 2023, but 3 fights will be announced.
All right. Well, you heard it all here from the ultimate post-wrestling MMA prognosticator, Eric Marcotte. I called you Marcotte. Can you believe it? Unbelievable.
A throwback.
Yes. Yes. So that was a lot of fun. That wraps up the awards. That wraps up the show. I mean, we hit 2 hours, Eric. Can you believe it?
Yeah, I think going into this one, we knew this was going to be a very long show, and it lived up to those expectations.
But it was fun. It was fun. I enjoyed every second of it. I enjoyed being back for you, for the people in the chat, of course. Shout out to everybody in Discord who voted on the MMA Awards, and to everybody who listened to the show throughout the year, 2022, and of course, today's show. The next time that the UFC returns will be on February 4th from the UFC Apex. The canceled Derek Lewis versus Sergey Spivak fight has been rescheduled with a 1 a.m. start time, curiously enough. I guess they're really targeting some late night West Coast viewers, really afraid to go head to head with Bellator, who returns to CBS that night as well. So a very unusual start time for that one. And then the next time that John Pollock and Eric Marcotte will be here to review a UFC event will be UFC 284, Alex Volkanovski versus Islam Makhachev, an incredible fight, champion versus champion. That's February 12th, live from the RAC Arena in Perth, Australia. What's your thoughts on that card, Eric?
Honestly, I think the card looks pretty bad, but the top two fights are very good. You have Alexander Volkanovski, the pound-for-pound top fighter in the world right now, moving up to fight Islam Makhachev, who's looked just unstoppable since his last loss. Islam's naturally favored going into this one, but Volkanovski's a hard guy to count out, so I think it's a really exciting matchup. And then we have Josh Emmett versus Yair Rodriguez for the interim featherweight title. An interim title, is that completely necessary when the champion is fighting on the same card? I do not know, but that should be a fun fight.
Yeah, definitely. Very, very, very exciting fight. Yair's, you know, always in thrilling fights and has continued to get better. And Josh Emmett has looked really great as of late as well. You know, he's sort of one of those guys, sort of similar to Bilal Muhammad in that regard, that he was sort of somebody you could never really could picture breaking through into the top of the division. But as of late, he has definitely established himself as somebody who is right up there. Although I don't know if anybody is at that caliber of the current champ, Volkanovski.
No, I'd agree. It's going to take a lot to unseat Volkanovski at featherweight, and perhaps what will unseat Volkanovski at featherweight would be him permanently moving to lightweight. So maybe Emmett and Rodriguez can cross their fingers for that result.
Yeah. And so once again, that comes up on February 12th. Well, that's the day of the event. You'll probably be going live the following day. Any final things you want to say to the post-universe, Mr. Eric?
You know what? I will first off say to you, thank you, Phil, for stepping in here and running the show with the predictions as well as the card. I have had a lot of technical issues here while I've also been extremely tired. So I've done my best to push forward with a smile on my face, but it was made all the easier because of your work today. So
Oh, thank you. Well, you handled it smoothly. I didn't notice any technical issues minus that one glitch. So you handled it like a pro, Eric. Yeah. Next time we see you, are you going to have a full beard?
Oh, how long do we have? It's only like 3 weeks, isn't it? Yeah, I'll have a full beard by then. I can do that.
Okay. Yeah. Because we could barely recognize you. The people were very confused.
Now, listen, guys, there was a shaving accident. And sometimes when that happens, you just need to get rid of the whole thing. But, you know, thankfully, it grows back very quickly for me. I'll have a nice full beard, at least by the next time I'm on camera. And I'm sorry for everyone I disappointed watching the video version to see my clean shaven face. I know the post community deserves better than that. And I'll do better to improve myself.
Okay. All right. I love the commitment to self-improvement. All right. So with that said, if you want any more exciting, incredible MMA or pro wrestling content, you can visit us in the Discord, participate in Fight Nights voting, postwrestling.com/Discord. If you want amazing, incredible, exclusive content, go to postwrestlingcafe.com. And remember, please hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, and Post Wrestling will see you soon. Bye, everybody.